Blog Talk Radio.
The plot thickens to destroy Michael Jackson.
As the story unfolds,
if you thought there was nothing more to say about Michael Jackson, just wait.
Unauthorized biography.
The paparazzi would not leave him alone.
Made against the performer. And what they did find
was a series of lies about Michael Jackson.
Here we go again. Another lost fraud. Michael Jackson.
Numerous lies.
As the story unfolds, there will be a lot more to say about Michael Jackson.
Breaking news.
Choosing King Jordan Radio for this Thursday, November 29th, 2012. And happy belated holidays to everybody. And we're going to get right to it. We have Pearl Jr. with us. And here she is. Pearl, how are you?
Fine. How are you, King Jordan?
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful. How was your Thanksgiving and your birthday?
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And we definitely had that documentary, which we'll be going over after. And good times. How is it over there in L.A.?
Oh, it's fine out here in L.A. It's a little chilly. But, no, we've had middays. It's been kind of warm. So it's nice out here in L.A., but it's still a little bit too cold. I like the hot days, and I like the long sunshine days. I love the sun.
Yeah. Just so the fans that we get new fans every day. They still don't know the truth of the trial. Well, actually, before that, Christmas is coming up soon, and what a way to spend your Christmas if you are a true Michael Jackson fan and you want to know the truth behind the Michael Jackson 2005 molestation trial. Pearl Jr. uncovers it, and Pearl, why don't you tell them how they could get that?
It's called, well, there's two documentaries. They're virtually the same, except for one, they have different bonus footage. And one of them is called Behind the Scenes of the Michael Jackson Trial. And that was the first documentary Elbow Grease Productions had ever produced. And then we got offered a distribution deal. And we repackaged it, put on a new cover, and called it Michael Jackson, the Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop. And both of those are on Amazon.com. Or you can just go to Michael Jackson. Insider.com, and then there's links that'll take you there.
Right, and also you have Prudicide, if I'm pronouncing that right?
No, Pseudicide. Nope, the P Pseudicide. Is silent, like in pneumonia and pseudonym.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Pseudicide. Did Michael Jackson fake his death to save his life? It's an e-movie book, which is a book in which you can read online as an electronic book, and there's links in it, and you can click the links to where if I'm telling you that Michael's alive, I have to prove it, right? So
right.
I take you to links and videos and articles and everything to support my theory. So it's really a fun read. It's really fun. And you can find out about that at, it starts with a P. It's called Michael Jackson Pseudicide. Pseudocide, Pseudicide, and you can go to MichaelJacksonInsider.com, and that's available on Amazon.com as well.
And, of course, the video DVD is also available. Is that
right.
correct?
Right. Yes, it's called Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? And it's on Netflix. And the Netflix is just the actual 54-minute documentary. But if you want the bonus footage, which is pretty interesting, a lot of great more stuff, you know, more things
about
the death.
And you have some guests on there, right?
You can get the DVD, and that's available on Amazon.com as well. It's called Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? You know, just reviewing that, boy, I've done a lot of Michael stuff, huh?
Yes, you have. And let me just say for the record, you didn't come out right after the death announcement and just start, the, you know, Michaeling it. You've been at it since, 7 years now, right?
Almost 7.5 since I was a credentialed media for the 2005 trial, and my first day inside that courtroom was the second day of trial. My first day was March 1st, 2005. Yeah, and I was inside the courtroom, and I also was inside the courtroom for the Conrad Murray trial as well.
Right, and we'll get to the Conrad Murray thing later on. Of course, we have some new callers, and we're going to recap some of the stuff we did and some new stuff. Of course, that trial in 2005, you started out there, second day?
Second day. The trial started February 28th, and I arrived March 1st, which was the very second day.
And there was something compelling you said on the ID Network on Mrs. Jones' show about the sister. Why don't you enlighten our callers about that?
Yeah, you know, over being credentialed media for such a huge media event, for such a mega, mega top superstar, most famous man in the world, you know, once you're in there, you're wowed that you can't believe you're in there, because I had no idea that a series of events was going to lead me to Michael Jackson, which it did. But while I was in, when I first arrived there, I was in what you call the media overflow room in the back, where it was a closed-circuit TV. And I heard Davelin, the accuser's sister, was on the stand, and she said, "I didn't know that my father molested me until my mother told me." And I was like, "Oh, my God, oh, my God." She's telling us her mother put her up to it, and as she was being questioned further, she said it again, that she didn't know her father molested her until her mother told her. And I said, "Oh, my goodness." And then at that point, it became more about justice for Michael, because at that point, the little girl was saying, "My mother made us do it all." And everything from that point on substantiated Michael's innocence in those allegations. And I was the odd man out. Me and William Wagner were two small media companies, and the smallest out of all the CNNs and CBSs and, you know, BET and all those networks. We were the smallest. I had a little talk show that was available to 1 million people in metropolitan Los Angeles called True Talk Straight Out of L.A., and William Wagner did the public access for the Santa Maria area, region. And we both knew that he was innocent, and we would kind of, you know, be in our little sewing circles, and everybody else was hell-bent on seeing Michael crucified, have his image crucified. You know, they were lying, they were misrepresenting, they were being deceptive in their reporting. It was just horrible to watch. It was horrible to be in the courtroom, hear the facts, hear the truth, and then come drive 2.5 hours home from Santa Maria and hear the reports and hear the distortion and hear what they decided to pick up on, that they could sensationalize it. And I just felt so horribly, horribly bad for him. But I was only in the media overflow room for one segment of the first day. After the first break, when I was there, I got to be in the courtroom ever since. So I was in the courtroom, you know, as many times as I wanted during the course of the 13-week trial.
So prosecution was alleging that Michael Jackson molested Gavin after the documentary, after all the smoke, after everybody's trying to get an interview with the our videos. Isn't that accurate?
Well, you know, they never really had a date, which is really crazy.
Really?
There was never really a date of when it happened. Yeah, but apparently it was supposed to be after that, which is absurd. You know, the whole case became absurd, that Michael was going to kidnap them in a hot air balloon. I mean, it just became a circus of ridiculous allegations. So, you know, poor Michael, I watched him just shrink and just lose weight, and I would see him, and we weren't allowed to talk to him, and he would pass by me, and I would try to speak with him with my eyes to say, honey, baby, please eat, please, please, you know, I was pleading with my eyes to try to, you know, let him know that, you know, I got you. You know, I'm a little tiny media company, but I'm going to do all I can for you, you know, because you're being railroaded, and it's just plain, simple, wrong. And I remember during deliberations and being at Neverland with all the fans and all of us praying that Michael was going to be vindicated fully, and I remember telling his security guard, tell Michael, don't worry, they're not going to get him on nothing. And they didn't. Everything was not guilty for Michael Joe Jackson.
And a lot of people that haven't filed that case, that took about, what, 5 to 6 days? They didn't. That wasn't an hour back like O.J. That
no, it was several days, right? I think it was 7 real days, 5 business days. And, oh, yeah, it was.
So they went
really,
over it.
Mm-hmm.
They went over it limb by limb, you know, every piece by piece, evidence by evidence.
The original 10 counts that Michael was charged with, I guess Sneddon figured out that, you know, he was going to lose the case, and then he added 4 more misdemeanors, you know.
Did
he
really
add them? And so it
made
it 14 counts, and Michael was found not guilty on all 14.
Did he added them in the middle of a trial?
No, right before the trial. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
right
okay,
before
right
trial.
Before the trial.
Yeah,
now,
isn't that
the that's terrible. Falsifying evidence is what William Wagner has petitioned for. Can you, if he might call in, I'm not sure, but if he doesn't, can you give us a glimpse into what he's alleging Tom Sneddon should be indicted for?
Okay, I'll just say from what I know and what William and I have talked about, and William is also in the Michael Jackson, the Trial and Triumph documentary where he tells this story. And
good
there
man.
Was, Michael had a lot of girly magazines, which is not the sign of a pedophile, lots of girly magazines. And it's not a sign of someone who's
no
homosexual either. It's indicative of someone who's heterosexual. And he had lots and lots of girly magazines. Well, at one point, Tom Sneddon, the prosecutor, was saying, and why are Gavin Arvizel's fingerprints on this girly magazine? And but then Tom Mesereau was smart enough to realize that magazine wasn't even out at the time that the Arvizels were even at Neverland. So it was impossible. So apparently Tom Sneddon had said, here, did Michael show you this magazine? And the boy picked it up and probably said no or whatever he said, and he got his fingerprints on there. So that is falsifying and misrepresenting. That's a sign of desperation that you really don't have any evidence. There was no DNA of those children found in Michael's bed or anything. So there was just nothing. All it was the words out of people's mouths. And a lot of people don't realize that accusations and words that come out of people's mouths can be very, very harmful.
Oh, absolutely. And a prosecutor was indicted for falsifying evidence back in the 2006 lacrosse scandal. Do you remember that?
Oh, no, I don't. I didn't follow that court case. I'm not a court case buff, you know, and I'm not a death hoax buff. I'm a Michael Jackson buff.
Oh, okay. Sounds I wanted to talk about some people that we didn't mention last time. Let's talk about Mr. John Branca. Where did they start? How did they meet and everything? And where do they stand now?
I don't know. They met sometime in the 80s. John Branca was young. He helped Michael. He was one of Michael's lawyers. Catherine was kind of against Michael hiring Branca because he was so young, but he came with impeccable credentials, and Michael gave him a shot. And together they secured the Sony catalog, which soon became the Sony ATV catalog. And they've done other monumental, you know, feats, you know, the purchase of Neverland. And John was his main lawyer for many, many years. And now John Branca is a co-executor for the Michael Jackson estate. And some people, you know, disagree with it and say the will is fake. But if Michael Jackson faked his death, then this is what I believe, okay, with John Branca. I believe that Michael and Branca did have a falling out. And it was was around 2002, because there's a letter out there that Michael fired John Branca and told him to give all his paperwork and all his stuff to Mr. LeGrand, who was the new attorney. From Mr. LeGrand, it was supposed to go to Tom Mesereau. That's where Michael's paperwork was supposed to go. So John Branca wasn't supposed to have the will itself. Now, all of a sudden, death announced. Well, let's go a week before the death announcement, 8 days before the death announcement. Apparently, now let's go back to the press announcement of the O2 Arena, okay, because it's a long little story. The press announcement, which was March 3rd, 2009, Michael went to London to their O2 Arena, which is owned by AEG, and said, I'm going to be doing my last shows. This is it. When I say this is it, I mean this is it. And he told them that, you know, I'll be performing the songs my fans want to hear. So we all said that. It went out to the world. I believe that back in the year 2000, Paul Gungerware, who is a part of AEG, he had a long relationship with Michael that went back to the Bad and Dangerous tours. And I believe that Michael had planned to fake his death in the year 2000 when Michael and John Branca were on good terms. Now, the reason why I believe that is because there's a website domain that was registered in the year 2000. It was called MichaelJacksonLive.com. And they sold This Is It tickets in 2009. Now, it was registered in the year 2000. Now, MichaelJacksonLive.com matches with AEGLive.com and LALive.com. And they were registered in 96 and then early 2000s, those entities of Ann Schultz Entertainment Group, AEG. Philip Ann Schultz is the owner. And so I believe that John Branca brokered that deal during the Invincible era, and I believe that's when Michael first planned on faking his death, because if you look at the Invincible album cover, it looks like a ghost. You listen to the song Threaten, The Living Dead. You listen to Heaven Can Wait. You listen to several of the songs that are on that album. You'll know that Michael, Unbreakable, Invincible, all these mean that you might think I'm dead, but I'm really not, right? And I don't think it worked out. The Michael was very upset, you know, for a few years after that about conspiracy, people trying to block his dream and all this other stuff. So whatever happened, he could not do the plan then. And I believe that John Branca had an airtight part of that deal. Now let's fast forward to 2009. Michael all of a sudden he fires Branca 2003. I think it's 2003 or 2002. He fires Branca. There's a letter in my suicide book where I talk about this. And so Branca was accused of, with Tommy Mottola, of funds being, Michael's royalties being shipped to an overseas account. Stealing, embezzlement, okay? Michael found out about it. There was an Interpol investigation. Branca and Michael wash hands of each other. Then in 2006, Michael bought, John Branca had 5% of Michael's royalties. Michael bought them back for, you know, I don't remember how many million dollars, $6 million or something. And that would cut all ties between Michael and John Branca, all of them. But I believe that when John Branca heard Michael do the This Is It, I Mean This Is It, the press conference, Branca said, I got an ironclad deal that if Michael plans on faking his death, he must include me. This is what I believe happened, because 8 days before the death announcement, there's an emergency meeting, and the reason why I say it's an urgent meeting, an emergency meeting, is because John Branca came down to the Great Western Forum, which is in Los Angeles, where Michael was rehearsing. Now, that shows me that it was a sign of urgency. Okay, because you're going to come down as a lawyer where Michael's rehearsing. You didn't have a private meeting at dinner or at his house or at, you know, at your office or whatever. You came down to his rehearsals. And I believe at that point, John Branca said, look, you know, you better let me in on this or I'm blowing the lid on this. I look at my contract, ironclad, you better let me in on this deal. And I believe at that point, Michael gave John Branca the will. And John Branca was back in the deal. Now, there was originally three executors of the will. Barry Siegel, who resigned, like in 2003 as well, or four, And there's John McClane, who's a friend of the family that's been around since high school. Him and Jermaine were friends, and he's a music executive. They went to the same private high school out here in Van Nuys. And John McClane's a music executive who has, you know, done a lot of great, wonderful things. He's been a friend to the family. And John McClane. So, and John Bronca. So those are the three. One of them resigned, so you have the two co-executors of the estate. And I must say this. I did take a picture with John Bronca at the Fan Fest in Las Vegas a year ago, as a matter of fact, December last year.
Right.
And it was surprising, and I went and saw the Immortal Tour. And I believe that Bronca and McClane have done an excellent job, because it was just reported last week. I know it's so much information. It was just reported last week that Michael has paid off all his personal debts. And,
wow.
And he's in the black. And the only debt he has now is something that has so much equity. He still owes $280 million to the Sony ATV loan. But Michael's portion, which is 50%, is worth $1 billion. So Michael still has $720 million of equity in that Sony ATV catalog. So, yay, Bronca McClane. Michael's out of debt.
Okay. Do you mind if we take a call?
Please do.
Okay, we're going to go to California, and let's go to Mark in California. He's been holding. Mark, your question or thought for Pearl.
Who brought Jackson out of debt?
The estate did.
Why would they do that?
Well, he's an entity that's worth a lot of money. A lot of celebrities, big celebrities, make a lot of money in debt. Elvis's estate is still making tens of millions of dollars a year. So is the John Lennon estate. So is the Jimi Hendrix estate. So is the Marilyn Monroe estate. So that's your job as an estate director, is to make money for the beneficiaries of that will.
Even though that these people are dead?
Yes, it's regular protocol. I mean, it's investment. I don't know why that would, be offensive to you.
No, it's not offensive to me. It's just shocking. People die every single day, and their things are not, they're just left untouched by anybody.
Well, Michael has music. Michael wanted to live on forever. He wanted his music to live forever. I believe these are the wishes of Michael Jackson, but I believe Michael Jackson faked his death. So, you know, I believe that is an artistic expression, artistic performance, this whole thing is. But it's normal protocol. It happened with a lot of celebrities. It's nothing weird or rare about it.
How many other people have faked their death?
Well,
in this kind of predicament.
Well, we don't know how many has, but how many people have sold 75 million copies of an album? One, Michael Jackson.
That's a good girl.
Yes.
Yeah,
so Michael is Michael. He's an exceptional human being, the most famous man that walked the planet Earth. He has the number one selling album in the world. So you can't say what he'll do measured up to other people, because other people have not done what he's done.
What about Elvis Presley or Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin?
They all made money after death. But the thing is, Elvis, I believe Michael was obsessed with the Elvis death hoax. And I think that Michael said, God, it would be great if Elvis came back, but Elvis never came back. And I think he became very obsessed because there's an article from World Weekly News that dates back to 1994 that says Michael Jackson plans to fake his own death. So we know that Michael probably has been planning this for, you know, decades. And being, you know, and Michael, you know, wanted to be bigger than Elvis. He wanted to be bigger than the Beatles. There was even a Beatles death hoax, a Paul McCartney death hoax in the 1960s as well, where a lot of people thought Paul McCartney had died and that he was replaced by a lookalike. So it's
and
not
there
the
was
first
a 2008 Michael Jackson death hoax, right?
Pardon me?
There was a 2008 Michael Jackson death hoax, right?
Right. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, there was a death hoax from a radio disc jockey that said Michael Jackson had died and of a drug overdose. And this was December 2008, the week of Christmas. And then it was a TV news story saying that it was just a death hoax. And I believe that was the starting point of Michael executing his plan. And then in January, the National Enquirer said Michael had 6 months to live. Well, how would they know? Oh, I can go on and on and on, Mark.
when do you feel that Justin Bieber's turn is going to be into all this?
Well, isn't that funny you mentioned Justin Bieber? Well, he's kind of young, you know, and right now there's been so many fake death hoaxes that, you know, people come out, Eddie Murphy, Bill Cosby, you know, there's been so many of them. Yeah. There's been so many of them, but usually they come out and say, no, I'm alive. You
and
know,
just for
quick.
The record, Pearl, you're not a death hoaxer. You're just with the Michael Jackson, correct?
Right. I'm not a death hoaxer. I'm not a specialist in death hoaxes. I am someone who has fell into the world of Michael Jackson. I didn't believe in the death hoaxer until 8 months after the death announcement. I believed that Michael Jackson was dead. I was the first person to tweet in the world that an ambulance was at Michael's house. I was outside of Michael's house the day before, and I found out the day before the death announcement that a doctor had been spending the night, and I thought that was really, really strange because a lot of fans were worried about Michael and his health, so I went and checked to talk to the fans who camped out outside of his house to see what was going on. And then I knew the girl who sold maps, Star Maps, right outside of his house, and she called me minutes after the ambulance went in, and at 12:43, I tweeted that an ambulance went into Michael's house.
So what's your
result
of that? You think he's dead or alive after all that?
Well, there's a lot more, so if you stay tuned, I'll tell a lot more, but I believe that Michael Jackson faked his death. That's what I believe.
What about
and now you
kids?
See he faked his death to save his life. In essence, what are you saying? The media was all over him, and he wouldn't give him a chance to live a normal, quote, life. And you see him in that video, Ghost. He looks like an ordinary guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it's possible that, you know, he wanted to live a normal life and not be criticized? So
well,
he had
What I think is, yeah, Michael was into zombies, The Living Dead, Ghosts, that other one. You know, his two big full-length movies were about, and even in Moonwalker, he's presumed dead, and then he comes back even in Moonwalker. So you see a pattern in his films that he did about dying and not really being dead. So this is a common theme. So it's not anything that's far-fetched or anything, you know, that Michael Jackson faked his death. You'll hear a lot more. But I think when I said suicide, did Michael Jackson fake his death to save his life, what I believe is that Michael was criticized. People thought he was a child molester. His image was destroyed. And in 2007, his spokesperson, Ramon Bain, sent out a press release saying that they have just exposed or discovered the greatest conspiracy in entertainment history, that lawyers and high-powered executives had all conspired to bankrupt Michael Jackson. So I believe that the FBI was somewhat involved in helping Michael get this done, because the day after the death announcement, when the whole world's eyes are on the Jackson family members, Marlon is wearing an FBI hat. And I know that in April of 2009, 2 months before the death announcement, that Joe was on the phone talking to the FBI. And I have to interject real quick. There was a news story that Joe Jackson just had a stroke last night. It was a mini stroke. The publicist, who I know personally, Angel Holansky, sent out a press release saying that, yes, Joe did have a mini stroke. He couldn't stand. His head hurt. He couldn't really stand or walk. And they decided to take him to the hospital, and it was a small mini stroke, and he's fine, and he's rested, and he's expected to be released tomorrow. She also said that he's had two other mild, small strokes as well, and he is an 83-year-old man, but Joe does take good care of himself. So we wish him a speedy, full recovery, because without Joe Jackson, we would not have enjoyed 40 years of just wonderful entertainment and music from the entire Jackson family.
Maybe he found that his son is still alive, and that's put
him
in.
Yeah, he would know. He would know ahead of time. He would know
ahead
of time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes. All right. We're going to get to a little break here. We're going to go to an Earth Song remix. So stand pat for about 7:55. When we come back, we'll discuss Raymond Chandler, Wendy Murphy, the ABC, how they decided to put this on air, having that awful Martin Bashir documentary, and much, much more. So I'm going to put you on mute, Pearl.
Okay.
And we'll be back in about 8 minutes. after this song. So let's get right to the song, Robert. Okay, that was Earth Song from the 97 Blood on the Dance Floor remix, voted number one remix album of, I think, all time. And that album got, you know, a little unnoticed to me, Pearl. You remember that one?
Yeah, the Blood on the Dance Floor was Michael's most unsuccessful album. So, you know, during the time that he was supposed to be alive. So, but it was still, for me, I remember Reby talking about it, saying it was his most expressive. And it was an album where he really poured his heart, his soul, his feelings, his emotion, what he was going through into it. But I think Blood on the Dance Floor was kind of weird for some people, because dance floors are supposed to be fun. And he was saying that his dance floor, they've killed it. They've destroyed it. They've dirtied up his dance floor, you know, and that was his expression of,
and
look what you've done to my career. Mm-hmm.
And Susie, he was referencing, maybe he had some kind of interaction with a chick by the name of Susie, because he said,
well,
Susie has your number, Susie, something like that. You remember that?
Yeah, it's about girls. He always writes songs about girls.
That's another thing. You
good
know,
girls are bad girls, you know,
right.
Good girls.
No, I was going to say, what pedophile has all these songs that are about the lady in my life, you know, PYT,
yeah.
And then, you know, beautiful girl. I could go
yeah.
on and on and on. Think about that, you know.
Yeah.
If he's such a quote-unquote monster pedophile, like some people like to say, you know, why is he writing all this the beautiful women stuff?
Well, because he's not a pedophile, never
right.
was, and has zero
right.
interest in having sex with anybody of the same gender, let alone
now,
little kids. So he's,
right.
not, he's
now,
a regular heterosexual male.
Tom Sneddon absolutely did his own search for witnesses. I believe he went to Australia.
Yeah.
He looked vigorously for kids, like they did with Jerry Sandusky, but that was legitimate. They practically begged kids to say things that never happened. And
right.
they found this Arvizio family that were involved with celebrities such as Jay Leno, Chris Tucker, am I missing? George Lopez,
mm-hmm.
and people like that. So a lot of people don't look at the real facts of this case, and they have already made up their mind, and it still bothers me, but hopefully we're giving them some information that they didn't know before. And so,
well, there was a guy by the name of Ron Newt, and he had, I think, twin boys. He had two boys. And Michael and Joe were going to manage the boys and bring their career, kind of like a Chris Cross, which Michael was involved with, which was
that's
a kid group of the 90s. Uh-huh, and he had told me personally that they offered him money and they tried to finagle him and convince him to say Michael molested his boys, and he's like, but he didn't, you know, so I'm not doing it, you know. So, yes, they did, and they tried to coerce, they tried to bribe people, and thank God there were some scrupulous people that just wouldn't go for it, but unfortunately there were some bad people that did go for it. You know.
Absolutely, and there was the case out of Bakersfield, California, I believe also in the 80s, where the McMartin case.
Yeah.
So, like people say, oh, my God, children wouldn't lie, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's true.
If you are approached by a trained interrogator, and an interrogator, they're trained to, you know, get you twisted up and all that. And the McMartin case had nothing to do with Michael. I just wanted to make sure that anybody who's not familiar with the McMartin case in Bakersfield, it was a child care center, and the kids were convinced through manipulation to say that they were molested. But when it was all said and done and thoroughly investigated, the kids did not tell the truth about it. So the McMartin preschool was destroyed, but at least they kept their freedom.
Right. And he had a lot of girlfriends throughout the years. You know,
yes.
Lisa Marie, that was a real girlfriend of his, I believe. You know, maybe it didn't go. I think he wanted to have kids, or vice versa, right away. And for whatever reason, that was.
I'm
romantic.
Not sure if that marriage was real, though.
No. The marriage, I don't think, was real, but they did love each other. I mean, I actually
yes.
saw Diane mm-hmm. Sawyer. They kid around, and Lisa said that on Howard Stern that they had sex.
Right.
And she said it to Oprah. She said it to a lot of people. I don't think she would just go up there and lie.
And there's a book called Remember the Time with a girl named Teresa Gonzalez, and she talks about when Michael was filming The Wiz, how they had sex in the hotel room with LaToya in the bedroom. And she talks about once in the park, you know, Remember the Time, in the park, in the dark, that her and Michael had sex in the car. It's in the Remember the Time book by Teresa Gonzalez, and there's lots of articles about Michael and Teresa, and the reason why they were able to become really close was because she would write letters to Michael, and she would number them, so that when he got back from being on tour, if she wrote him several letters, she said she wrote him over 100 letters, and he would know what letter to open first, and so he became kind of close to her, and she was the chosen fan that got to spend time in the family, brought her in, and they took care of her while she was Michael's friend. Michael made
Frank Cassio, may he rest in peace, was
not
on
Frank
the
Cassio.
TV.
Frank Cassio's alive.
Oh,
you mean Frank DeLeo.
Frank DeLeo, yes, he's
a
young man.
Yes, Frank Cassio is alive. Sorry, Frank.
Yes. And he did say something on one of your videos, which we'll get to later. But Frank Cassio swore on the Bible that Michael Jackson was not gay. He told him privately, you know, a lot. If you saw the David Jest, The Life of an Icon.
Yes, I saw that. And also in his book, he talks about it. And also, you know, anybody, even Rabbi Smoolie, everybody that knew Michael said he talked about women just like any other guy would talk about women. You know, I like her. Look at her. She looks good. She looks fine. You know, just regular guy. You know, and there was other women, him and Stephanie Mills. They kissed. She said that in an interview. And there was Mickey Howard, who's another R&B singer, who is suspected of having his secret child, and that's why he wrote The Child Is Not Mine and Billie Jean and wanting to start something, which is Don't Have the Baby If You Can't Feed the Baby. And Jill was her manager during that time. And Brandon was born during that time. And Brandon looks and sounds and acts just and built just like Michael. So that's another girlfriend. And, of course, Michael was in love with Diana Ross for many, many years. And I believe he was in love with Liz Taylor, too. So Michael, the irony is, he liked older women, you know, and here he is accused of liking, you know, little boys, but he was in love with Diana Ross and Liz Taylor.
Diana Ross and Liz, right. Didn't the alleged Will say that if something was to happen to Mike, that he would leave it with, I believe, Diana Ross?
Right.
First
the
mother,
kids.
And if something would happen to Catherine, you know, at least with what they put on TV.
That was in the will. That was written in that will, whether
that's
it's real or fake. But that was written in the will. And but the thing is, I believe Diana Ross knows that Michael faked his death. Okay? I believe she knows about it. And she's just not playing along. She probably told him, don't do it. And he did it. So she said, keep my name out of it, because she's been very detached and unreasonably detached, you know, to where it's like, Diana, come on, you got a heart. Michael loved you. You loved him. You knew him since he was a child. And there's a cute story in Jermaine's You Are Not Alone book involving
Which came out last year, right?
You Are Not Alone. And in the book, Jermaine recounts the Motown 25, which is where Michael just shot to orbit, you know, that performance that Michael did of Billie Jean. And he said before they went on stage, Michael disappeared for about 20, 30 minutes, and they found out that he went rummaging through Diana Ross's luggage.
Are you serious?
He was still that obsessed with her that he went rummaging through her luggage.
Oh, my. But he did have serious affection for Diana Ross.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to talk about ABC. We were talking about it a few days ago. They're the same people who bought you the Michael Jackson Secret World, which was a documentary from Martin Bashir, where he got this guy Terry George to lie on him. He got Diane Diamond, you know, the whole crew, and then, of course, the most famous one, Living with Michael Jackson.
Right.
And now you had your own theories about this. They brought a beautiful, wonderful documentary, Bad 25, which was on Thanksgiving, and which will be released on DVD in February and Blu-ray. What was your thoughts on the ABC thing to do?
No, Spike Lee's documentary, I think, was phenomenal. He did a great job where it's bringing Michael back into the music, which was his art. Michael, he did a song called Music and Me, and there was another song, Born to Entertain. And, you know, Michael and music are in love with each other. They are soulmates. And any woman who thinks that they can come between that love affair is just crazy. She better join the love affair and hope for a threesome.
Right.
But she's not breaking up the love affair that Michael has with music and entertainment, period. And Michael pretty much through his love of music and through what he does, he just the greatest artist ever.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Now, this guy, Stacy Brown, he covered the 2005 trial, says he was a friend, but yet he wrote a book and said some not kind things about him. What's your thoughts on Mr. Stacy Brown?
Well, Stacy Brown and what was his publicist's name? Bob Jones.
Bob Jones.
Right. They wrote the book together, and it was really Bob Jones' story with Stacy Brown's expertise in writing and knowing the Jacksons as well. Well, Bob Jones got mad because Randy fired Bob Jones after 30 years of service, and they wanted revenge. And so Bob Jones said some unkind things about Michael, but he did say in the book that he did not believe Michael was a child molester. So that's a good thing. But a lot of things that he had said, that Michael licked some kid's head and whatever, you know. When he was cross-examined in the 2005 trial, he had to admit that a lot of that was just sensational, made up, you know, twisted up to sell books. And it wasn't under oath. So, you know, there's a difference between being under oath, where you can, you know, spend time in jail or get penalized monetarily, than just writing a book. So, you know, a lot of people wanted to hurt Michael to make money because the industry wanted to hurt Michael. So, therefore, you give the industry what they want, you get paid.
Now, you saw Tom Mesereau live. Unfortunately, they didn't broadcast, or fortunately, for Michael at least. Maybe, what do you think? Would it have been a good idea if they broadcasted that live, like Mari and some other trials, OJ? Would that have been good for the viewers to see?
I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't want that should be in 50 years from now when you're studying the greats, you know. Michael would like that to just be a small little blip in his legacy. And I think if that was out there in, you know, in 13 weeks, 8 hours a day, 6 hours a day from 8 to 2, I think that that wouldn't have been good for Michael's image to have that much footage about child molestation, even though the evidence did say that Michael was innocent, but people can soundbite and pick and choose and take one thing out of context and blast it over and over and over and over again, because sometimes it's easy to believe a simple lie than a complicated truth.
Well,
so
Mesereau
I
said
think
he
it
would
was
never
a good
go
idea
on.
That it wasn't recorded, huh?
Mesereau said he would never go on a Nancy Grace show. He said he was very, you know, along with a few other people, but Nancy especially, used her for platform there, 8 o'clock on the East, 5 o'clock on the West, on HLN, covering the Michael Jackson trial, bringing only in people like Diane Diamond, and, you know, when it just wasn't right, she would just, you know, he should get the death penalty in her eyes.
Well, she was Tweety Bird. She was kicked out of the trial. She did not even attend any of the trial itself, any of them. I never saw her in the courtroom. I saw Diane Diamond plenty, but I never saw Nancy Grace. So Nancy Grace was wrong, and she was embarrassed, you know. She believed in Diane Diamond. Diane Diamond fabricated, twisted, was deceptive in every way possible, and they all had egg on their face when the verdict was read. So I think that was Michael's vindication, and somewhat that was Michael's justice, and if you want to use the word revenge, that's revenge too, that I win and you lose.
Yes, and do you remember the day that they announced the verdict? I think you weren't, you told me on a previous episode, you weren't at court, but you
I remember
were,
the date.
Right. Now,
June
where 13th. Were you? Right,
June 13th, 2005.
Were you watching it on, it was all over
on
every
definitely.
Channel.
I was glued to the television. Are you kidding? I, you never knew when the verdict was coming in. You never knew. So I went down several days during deliberations hoping that would be the day. But being two and a half hours away, you just don't know what day it is that the verdict's coming in. So when the verdict came in, it was already, I didn't have 2.5 hours to get there. So that's
right,
it. And I had a radio interview scheduled for that day with KABC Talk Radio.
Right. So, but where were you, like, actually, though, you in front of a television?
Oh,
like,
definitely in front of a television, yes.
Yeah. And, I mean, you knew the truth and you knew what was going on. You must have had some teary eyes, I would imagine.
Cecil and I cried. Yes, we cried. We cried.
And I must admit,
cried
the
of
callers,
tears of joy.
I did cry too. Yes, it was tears of joy. And, you know, to me, it was just my eyes were glued. It was like watching, you know, a Yankee game for me, because my eyes are usually not glued unless it's sports. But to hear the count, and you had to hear it 14 times of not guilty was just, you know, really putting egg on Tom Stedden's face. And showing that no matter, you know, all this fake evidence that Sneddon tried to throw, the jury just did not buy it. You would agree, right? Okay, I think we lost Pearl. Hopefully she'll call back in. No callers yet, Robert. Let's wait. Let me see if Pearl's going to call back in. In the meantime, let's play a song. Let's play a song for now. Let's play that song right there. Okay.
The clock begins to destroy Michael Jackson.
As the story unfolds.
If you thought there was nothing more to say about Michael Jackson, just wait.
Unauthorized biography.
The paparazzi would not leave him alone.
Made against the performer. And what they did find
was the amazing lie about Michael Jackson.
Here we go again. Another lost cause. Michael Jackson.
Numerous lies.
Unauthorized.
Just in by more allegations made against.
Okay. I think we have her back now. Pearly, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry about that.
That's
sorry.
Okay. Thank God for music.
yes, sorry about that.
That's
my
quite
phone
all right.
Died. I had to go grab another phone.
Oh, okay. Was that the cell?
That's no, right. it's a wireless, and I think it's time to get a new wireless because it's not holding a charge as long as it needs to.
Right, absolutely. So we were talking about, you know, watching the verdict on June 13, 2005. And, yeah, I was really happy. And, you know, but I was sad that my dad had to go through this for 2 years, you know, going through the possibility of, you know, because jurors could do the right thing and they could do the wrong thing as well, as we've seen in many cases. So it was good
for
to know that.
For whatever reason, I had complete and utter confidence in Michael's full acquittal. I didn't have a doubt in my mind. I just knew it. I just knew that the jurors would do the right things because I would look at each one of them. And, you know, I'm not one to believe in telepathic powers or brain waves, but I would look at each one of them saying, you bet not, you know, take my boy down, you know. I would use whatever I could, whatever eye language, eye body movement, connections, whatever, to try to pray to that these people would do the right thing. And thank you, God, that they did do the right thing.
On all counts, not even the less included.
All 14, not guilty. All 14.
Yes, totally. Okay, we're about to go to a previously unreleased track. It's still unreleased, to my knowledge. The name of the song is Fall Again. And after we come back from Fall Again, we're going to talk about the 7 clues that Dr. Murray's trial was a hoax. We're going to talk about Peter Pan, PYT. We're going to talk about Chris Tucker, the hot chocolate incident. And we're going to find out, you know, as Pearl continues to investigate, you know, what's real, and your callers have the option to call in at 347-857-2950. As you see, she'll take on anybody and all comers. So probably we're going to play an unreleased track, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the death hoax, okay?
And just before you do that, that was produced with Robin Thicke. So I just wanted to give him credit for Fall Again.
Oh, Fall Again, it's an excellent song. I hope they get it on the next Michael CD.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, Robert, let's go to Fall Again. What a wonderful song. That's Fall Again. And who did you say the producers were?
Robin Thicke. He is Alan Thicke, the actor, is his son. And he's you know, a great R&B singer. And he worked with Michael on that song. It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Right, right, absolutely. Okay, let's go to a phone call. We've been holding for over an hour. You mind if we take it?
Oh, please do.
Okay, let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Caller, you're on the line from Texas. You have a comment or thought for Pearl?
Hi, is it me?
Yes, you're
Hello?
On. You're live. Hi, how are you?
Hi. I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay. What's
your question? Hi, how are you?
Hi, Pearl. This is, I know you get a ton of emails and stuff, but this is Sharon Lundy from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, hi, how are you?
How are you? I've sent you a bunch of emails and stuff like that. I didn't really have a lot to say. I just wanted to thank Pearl for just keeping Michael out there, keeping Michael in everyone's minds and in everyone's hearts. And I love that, you know, we're still
well,
talking
thank
about
you.
Him. Yes.
You know.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Pearl.
When I first got involved with the death hoax, it wasn't, I had fought it for 8 full months. I fought. No, he's dead, stop, let me mourn. And I cried every day for 8 full months. And when I finally made a decision to write the book, Suicide, Did Michael Jackson Fake His Death to Save His Life, the worst case scenario, I said, if he really is dead, the worst case scenario is Michael would love a death hoax.
Yeah.
You would love it. You know, so that's why I was able to proceed, because even in the worst case scenario, if he was really dead, he would be offended if he didn't get a death hoax.
Yes, yes. And you know,
but I really do believe Michael is alive, though.
And you know, you've made a believer out of me, and I was talking to someone about you a few months ago, and I said, you know, I've been emailing this woman and sending her messages back and forth on Facebook. And I said, and she believes that Michael's still alive. And I said, and the more, you know, things that she puts out there, the more I believe it. And the first thing that he said was, well, you know, I hope you're not sending this woman any money or anything like that. And that caught me so off guard. And I said, oh, my gosh. I said, she's never even suggested anything like that to anyone. I said, no, she really believes it. And, you know, it's not just her. There are a lot of people following her. And I've told people, watch it. Just, you know, don't listen to me. Just watch it. And it's going to at least make you think about some things.
Well, thank you so much. They can watch the Alive documentary right on Netflix. And guess what? If you join Netflix, it's the first 30 days is free. So you can watch it for free if you're not a member of Netflix. And if you are, it's $8 unlimited movies. So,
exactly.
You know, boy, you know, I'm not making much money off of that at all. You know, so... So I'm just grateful, and I am sincere. With everything I put out there, I am sincere.
Yes,
and I am fact-checking and double-checking, and the fans double-check everything I do. So.
Yes, definitely. Well, I just wanted to say hello, and it's
well,
good
thank
to hear
you.
Your voice and good talking to you. You guys have a good evening.
You too. Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. That was a nice call. And, yes, let's talk about that documentary you have now that we bring it up. Of course, Christmas is coming up, and what a way to spend Christmas with Michael Jackson in your DVD player. And if you want to read about Michael Jackson, Pearl, we mentioned that at the top. It's called, I can never get that book right name right.
Suicide. Pseudo. Like, pseudo means fake. Suicide. So fake death. Suicide. Did Michael Jackson fake his death to save his
life?
What
do you outline in that book, basically?
Well, you know, the book has 115,000 words. It's a 525-page manuscript, and I took 80 pages out of it. I took 80 pages out. Okay, so it's a huge document, and it was written and completed May 2010, and I have enough death hoax clues to write 2 more of those books. And right now I'm working, so I don't have the time that I had before, but I do plan on one day writing Suicide 2. I promised it to the fans, but I just haven't had the time. But I'm keeping up with notes, all you guys out there, so I am on top of it. So when I finally have the time to sit down and write the book, I am prepared to write it.
Yes. How long did it take you to write Suicide?
Well, I had been taking notes for – you know, months and months. So it took me probably, and I'm a fanatic. I get crazy. When I'm doing something, I think it took me 3 to 4 months to write it and to edit it. But that was, you know, 12, 15, 18 hours a day, writing all through the night, looking up and going, oh, my God, the sun is up, you know. So I'm not, you know, like most writers, you get in the groove, you get in the zone, and you just write. And so it's a big, magnificent document, and you will be a believer you read that book because I prove everything to you.
Are you proud of it, that book?
I am very proud of Suicide. I'm very proud of all my Michael projects. I wish I just was a bigger company with bigger budgets, but I don't have a big budget, but I get it done, though. I get it.
Right,
Cecil and
right.
I get it done.
Let me state for the record, this is not Pearl's job, and she is not strictly making money off there. You
no.
have a regular job that you go work from 9 to 5
yep.
with everybody else. This is not your, your bread and butter. This
right.
is, right, this is
and,
yes.
And being an independent distributor, I mean an independent producer, you are at the mercy of distributors, and they steal from you. They steal from you. And
really?
So you have to get another job because you would be expecting a check and you wouldn't get it. They would find some reason not to show you the books, and you got to get lawyers and all that stuff. So it's a real mess. And I am a full-fledged production company, so I don't apologize for being a business. I don't apologize for being an author. You know, authors write books. They sell them. Documentary filmmakers make documentaries. They sell them. They air them.
Well,
I mean, it's called show business. You know, Michael's made, you know, up to $300 million a year, and that's $500,000 a day. You know, that's his art. So we don't need to apologize if you're within the form of ethics and morality, and you're doing a business and you're doing a service, you should get paid, and I'm not being paid, and that's awful. So I work about 70 hours a week at a job. So, But
yeah,
I still
no.
keep my Michaeling. I still do my Michaeling. I get up early in the morning before a 12-hour day, and I do my Michaeling, and I come home, and I do my Michaeling because the fans have depended on me to be a voice for the death hoax, and I honor and I treasure that position
and
that I've been given.
You're not one
I
of these people that started making money off Michael, bad or good, after the death announcement. Like I said before, you followed Michael Jackson all your life, and you followed the trial. So that, you know, there's a lot of people came out with books. Ian Halpering, for example, came out with the book immediately after the death announcement.
Yeah, and said some not so cool things, you know. And a lot of people talk from the sides of their mouths about Michael. Michael's cool, but I'm not sure he's totally innocent. Michael's cool, but I'm not sure he's totally heterosexual.
Well, yeah.
I'm not sure. You know, and they say, you know, two halves of this and a dozen of that, you know.
Yeah, no, with Ian Halpering, he did acquit him, in his mind at least, for the child thing. But he did say that he came to the conclusion that he was gay.
How would he know? I've never known a guy that said he was gay except for Jason Pfeiffer and Dr. Klein's nurse, you know, and Dr. Klein said it's absurd. I mean, this guy weighed 300 pounds, and Michael's only had one gay relationship, and the reason why Michael had a gay relationship with this guy who had a very dull personality is because, oh, all he had to say was, my father abused me too, and they bonded. I mean, come on, please. I mean.
Oh, and if you take one look at that Jason Pfeiffer, he's not.
There's
the
no
best.
Way.
He, you know, but if Michael was gay, he would not.
Right, he wouldn't pick Jason Pfeiffer. And it finally came out that it was not true. Dr. Klein said it was absurd. It's just ridiculous. It's not true. So there's
right.
no guy. That was the only guy that ever said he had a sexual relationship with Michael. You know, so Michael is totally heterosexual. When we saw, you know, it was kind of embarrassing. I brought my daughter as an intern during the 2005 trial, and it happened to be Michael's porn collection day.
Oh, what a day.
And nothing
but
girly magazines. No male homosexuality, no child pornography. There was some girly stuff, you know, which guys tend to like sometimes. But it was, you know, he even had, you know, people say think Michael is in street. He had the porn pimps up, hose down, you know, he had plumpers for fat chicks. He had plumpers for fat chicks. You know,
I
so he was definitely a heterosexual male.
Hot women that are 50 and over.
Yeah, he had all that stuff, all the women. And he had, subscriptions to Hustler and Playboy for like 10 years. You know, so he's definitely a regular heterosexual male. And I think that that helped him. It might embarrass him a little bit too much, but it was also his savior.
Now, we'll talk, just to get off subject for a second, the Elmo that they're going after hard now, what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, he's admitted that he had sexual affairs with teenagers, and it's unfortunate. And it's just, you know, I mean, you know that you work with children. You know that you're the voice that children love. You know, you just got to have some self-control. You know, you just got to have some dignity and some decency to know that you can't do that.
You familiar with Wendy Murphy?
Yes, I remember her from the trial. Yes, I remember Wendy Murphy. She sat next to me a few times.
Yeah, she compared the Jerry Sandusky case to the Michael Jackson case, and she also comparing this latest Elmo thing. I mean, let him, you know, leave him alone already. I mean, she is just like
she
on
was
auto.
Wrong. She was wrong, and some people just cannot admit that they were wrong. I mean, I heard the same evidence that she heard, but it was predetermined that he was guilty, and you know, probably sat in the sewing circle with Diane Diamond and Nancy Grace, and have them tell, you know, their little tale of lies and spin the web. And Wendy Murphy can think whatever she wants to think, but she's wrong, and there's never been a shred of evidence. If anybody is not a child molester, it's Michael Jackson, because no one else has been under 13 years of FBI surveillance. The FBI had a file on Michael Jackson for 13 years. They embarrassed him, made him strip down, and took pictures of his genitals, okay, to compare. They did not match the description.
They did not match, right?
They did not. If they would have matched, Michael would have been in jail. Okay?
Oh.
Period. That was the point. If they match, I'm taking you to jail. But they didn't match, and that's why he stayed free. The FBI never arrested him or charged him with anything because they never had anything. And with the FBI as well, they knew Michael was innocent, and they allowed Tom Snetton to smear Michael. And the media, there's only five companies that really control 85% of what Americans see, hear, and read. So it's not hard for there to be a media conspiracy, and it's not difficult for the media to fix things as well, because there's five top guys, and they tell you what to do, and then all their media companies have to do it. You know, there's been Michael has 4 years to clean up his act, to get his reputation back. And I believe that they negotiated a fresh start for Michael. And the fresh start was to die, just like Jack in the Box, when Jack in the Box had that old, they had the bad reputation of rats in the food and all this stuff. And then they blew up the clown. Remember that campaign?
Yes,
they blew up the clown, and then they brought back a newer, a funner, and a likable Jack, but it was still Jack in a Box, and that's what I believe this death hoax is.
If Michael does appear, is he criminally liable and things?
No, I went and looked it up, and I looked up the laws. I went down to Los Angeles, has the second largest law library in the country, and I went down there, and I spent the day. And these librarians at the law library, they have PhDs in librarian. And I asked them about faking the death, and what we came up with was the only laws that were on the books is you can't run from the law, okay, which he did not do. You can't run from your debts, and we know that he's paid all his debts, and you can't scam an insurance company, in which he did not do. And no insurance has been paid, none. No insurance has been paid. So right now, has he committed a fraud, or has he done performance art? Now, if he pays for, like with the Casey Anthony case, what they can do is they can make you pay for court charges. You know, Michael paid for the memorial. They reimbursed the police for the memorial service and stuff like that. So as long as he pays for all this stuff, I think it's a reality show in the making. And it's also a lesson about the media. And the reason why when the girl called and said people think she's crazy, that Michael Jackson faked his death, is because they haven't heard of it. They haven't heard anything about it, so they think it's ridiculous. Because if it had any credibility, the media would have told them, of course. Of course, you know, and since the media has been quiet, even about No Name still being on Michael Jackson's grave, you know, 3.5 years later, that should be worldwide news. Why isn't there a name on Michael Jackson's grave? And also, Michael Jackson's real name is not Michael Joseph Jackson, it's Michael Joe Jackson. So I believe the FBI, Michael had 4 years to fix his life. And I believe
right.
we're coming up on that 4 years. I don't know if the 4 years is up December 21st.
What about that four-year thing, that statement, he meant we got 4 years to get it right in the documentary? This is it?
This is it.
Is that a
yes,
quote?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not sure when the countdown started with 4 years, the moment he made that statement, or did it start at the death hoax in Albuquerque, New Mexico? I'm not quite sure. It's yet to be seen.
Okay, let's take another call if that's okay.
Yes, sure.
Okay, caller, you're on the line with Pearl Jr. Can you hear us, caller?
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, Conrad Murray. How do we get this? How do we start a petition to get his ass out of jail?
How do we know he's even in jail? if this is conducted by the FBI, why is he in solitary confinement? I talked to a nurse that's been at L.A. downtown, the Twin Towers, for 19 years. She had no idea who I was because I work a regular job. So when she told me that she was a nurse, a head nurse at the facilities at Dr. Murray, L.A. County Jail, where Dr. Murray is, I asked her, I said, so how's Dr. Murray doing? And she says, Dr. Murray, she says, I'm not sure he's even in there. She says, I haven't run across him. And we have heard that Dr. Murray's been sick. He's been complaining about pains. He's been complaining about aches. Now, this woman had no idea who I was in the Michael world. She still doesn't. I never told her. But she said that, isn't Dr. Murray out? She says, he hasn't run across my desk. Now, why wouldn't he? So I'm not even sure. And when I asked Sheriff Lee Baca personally, there's the one sheriff of L.A. County, and his name is Lee Baca, I asked him, I said, so how's Dr. Murray doing in jail? And his answer was, oh, his lawyers came by earlier today. Well, I didn't ask you that. And I said, well, when is he getting out? He said, oh, a year or so, I don't really know. And he said, well, you know he's in solitary confinement. And I said, but that's for the most hardened criminals. I mean, there's no bigger punishment than not having human interaction, you know, well, for his own safety. Well, I don't think, who's going to kill Dr. Murray? I mean, has he already been threatened and hurt? I can see him being in solitary confinement if he was already threatened and hurt. And the only person that has reported to see Dr. Murray in jail is Janet Jackson's ex-husband, Mark DeBarge. Isn't that interesting?
Why is
Janet?
I don't. He's the only person that says he saw Michael Jackson in jail was Mark DeBarge, who was Janet Jackson's ex-husband.
What about the Nicole Alvarez? Didn't she
yes.
say she?
Nicole Alvarez, on the third anniversary of Michael Jackson's death announcement, June 23rd, National Photo Group, who is the same people that put out the fake ambulance photo, the so-called last photo of Michael that has been proven to be fake, they recorded her on that day, and she says, oh, Dr. Murray, he's feeling a little bit better. He's reading, and she mentions one book that Dr. Murray read, which is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that book is about somebody presumed dead but was still alive. Go figure.
How does Michael's kids react to this?
Oh, Paris, well, she involves herself in it all the time.
In what?
In the death hoax. She leaves death hoax clues on her Twitter page all the time. If you go to MichaelJacksonInsider.com, I did a video about Paris's involvement in the death hoax, and it's just absolutely amazing. And then Prince, his son, Prince, also is talking about how much he loves the movie Skyfall, and Skyfall, James Bond 007, is about James Bond faking his death, presuming to be dead, but he's really alive. I mean, so all the family have involved themselves in the death hoax. During the Murray trial, LaToya says, right in front of the camera, everybody watch The Illusionist, watch The Illusionist movie, and The Illusionist movie is about someone faking their death, and they weren't really dead. I mean, I can go on and on and on with this. Is this Mark?
I believe this is Mark again, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark, you got a lot to learn, honey. Please go to MichaelJacksonInsider.com or, you know, take a shortcut and watch Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead on Netflix. 30 days. You get free trial for 30 days, okay?
Okay. I have a couple more questions.
Okay.
I don't mean to tie you up, but this is fascinating. I've been out for like 2 hours already.
Yes, yes. Okay, Mark, what's your question? Do you have any else?
Are there other people that's doing what Michael is doing?
What do you mean, other people?
Other famous people.
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I don't
you
know why
know
that
about
would
Michael.
Be. You know, I don't know. I mean, I just know that I'm a Michael Jacksonologist. I concentrate on Michael Jackson. So other people may do other things. Yes, a lot of other people have left, you know, participated in Death Hoax Clues, but I don't think that that's kind of relevant. That's
there was
not
a guy that wrote a book and said that Michael Jackson, he was like a 50-year-old virgin. Is that true?
Oh, Randall Sullivan is so inaccurate.
Oh, there you go. That's the guy.
He is so inaccurate. Everything, he said Michael had a prosthetic nose that came off at night. Please don't read that book. He is so inaccurate. I mean, Jack Wishna just died, which was a Las Vegas wheeler and dealer, and he's the one that sent Michael Jackson, sent a jet for Michael Jackson to come back from Bahrain to Las Vegas back in Christmas Eve 2006, because Michael had left the country right after his acquittal. And Jack Wishna just died yesterday, you know, of apparent suicide. And in Randall Sullivan's book, he had Jack Wishna taking Michael to Ireland. And it's just he's just inaccurate. Everything that he says is just inaccurate. He did not do a good job. It's a big old thick book of just sloppy journalism, not research. He's just not good. So don't believe anything that this guy says. He's lost all credibility with me.
I also saw a thing with on Different Strokes with Gary Coleman and the Bicycle Man. Tried to lure Gary Coleman and that other boy into the back of his shop, and he had pornographic material.
Who did?
The guy, old guy.
Who's
that was
guy?
Trying to seduce the boy.
Oh,
the
guy.
Shop guy.
Who?
This is from Different Strokes.
Yes,
I think he's talking about the pedophile episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that's important. I'm sorry. Sorry, Mark.
You guys are talking about these girly books and stuff like that. I mean, they got to be girly books in order to entice the boys. They're not going to
be. Well, wouldn't it be boyly books? Boy
books?
No,
it's not going to be boyly books because.
Well, how would
you
know? I mean, do you entice kids so you know how it works?
No, I love kids.
Well, then you have no. I don't mean to be smart, but if you don't know how it works, how do you have an opinion?
Because I'm educated through TV.
But the TV, I mean,
that was on Different Strokes. That
Michael,
was back in the day.
Let me just put it to you this way: I was in the courtroom, okay? A jury of his peers said that out of 14 counts, he was not guilty. The
That's
FBI
right.
investigated him, didn't find anything, okay? LAPD decided to pass on that Arvizo case because there was nothing. There was Tom Snedden looking to retire with a bang who had a vengeance to take Michael Jackson down, and he put everything that he had into taking the biggest star in the world down, and he failed. So if anybody is not a child molester, you better believe it's not Michael Jackson, because no one else has been scrutinized, looked at, investigated, researched as much as Michael Jackson. So he's the one person you can guarantee that is not a child molester.
Why would they suspect him like that? Put all those
well, because he people that. Like to twist things. Michael loved children. Okay? And when you love children and you realize that if children were more loved, they would grow up and be more peaceful adults. And Michael always said heal the world, and he was a humanitarian. And he just felt that if we got to the kids and we loved the kids and we showed them a better way, they would grow up to be better adults.
Yeah,
and that
was
his answer to healing the world.
As a grown man was sleeping with these kids.
No, he was not sleeping with the children, okay? I mean, look, Mark, if you want to believe that Michael is a pedophile, go ahead. I mean, there's nothing I can do because you got but. Unless you have investigated him.
I just want these questions.
I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm listening.
I'm in the courtroom. What is the jury? You think the jury sat there for 14 weeks and didn't hear nothing? I mean, what are you thinking went on for 6 hours a day for 14 weeks?
Look at that.
What do you think happened?
Look at that Casey Anthony girl. She got off. Look at the OJ. He got off.
So what? You don't know what happened with those two people either.
The same thing with them.
Well, but you weren't in the courtroom listening to the testimony, were you?
I saw it on TV. On CNN.
Okay, well, whatever. You know,
TV,
but that's Casey Anthony and that's OJ Simpson. This is Michael Jackson, and I'm telling you as someone that was in the Michael Jackson courtroom, I'm not saying I'm an expert in everything because I'm not a fool and I don't suffer from the arrogance of ignorance to think that I know better. If I research something, then I become an expert. If I just hear little bits and pieces and little tiny chunks or whatever, I don't consider myself an expert. But in the Michael Jackson child molestation, I am. And I'm here to tell you, no matter what you say, he's no child molester. Pardon me?
You're saying that he is still alive.
Yes, I am. And after you watch Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead, you probably think the same way, too. And there's way more stuff.
Mark,
and there's way more. Why isn't there a name on the man's grave? Come on. I mean, come on. After 3.5 years, there's still no name on the grave?
They don't want people to just go there and stumble across it.
No, it's in a building. It's in a locked building called Holly Terrace at Forest Lawn. It's in a mausoleum. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense that there's no name on the most famous guy in the world who lived life for his name to be up in lights?
It's undisclosed.
It's not undisclosed. They had three ceremonies at Forest Lawn, and I called Forest Lawn, and Mark is taking up so much of the show. I had three ceremonies at Forest Lawn, three. They had the private ceremony, no open casket. They had something else. They had the burial, which was 71 days later, no open casket, and the family has went up there. Okay, and they've had the media insight there with other events. And you know what Forest Lawn told me? The month after the burial, which was October 2009, I had been hearing about the death hoax, and I called Forest Lawn, and I said, where is Michael Jackson buried? And Forest Lawn told me, we don't have Michael's body, and we've never had it.
There you go, and let's try a different caller, if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. Caller, you're on live with Pearl Jr. Any thoughts or questions or comments?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, yes. You're on the line.
Okay.
You're on the line, yes, yes.
Okay, what's your question or thought for Pearl?
The person that just said yes, you're alive.
Okay, so that call decided to want to listen in. Okay, let's try this caller.
Hello.
Caller, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Peter.
Hi. Oh, Peter.
Hi,
okay.
How are you doing, Pearl?
Fine, how are you, Peter?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I'm just sitting here listening to this lovely show.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to do all this and have Peter P. White here. And we'll do all that. We're just going to take a song break. Pearl, my producer wants to know if you saw the Mock South Park episode of Michael Jackson and your opinion of that.
No, I never watched South Park. I'm sorry.
Okay. We're going to get
to... Even though it was Janet Jackson's one of her favorite shows.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so we'll bring
Peter. Are you going to hold on?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to bring Peter into the conversation after this song break. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call. Let's get to this song, Robert. Okay. And we will be back. Sorry about that technical difficulty there. Let's bring back into the conversation Pearl Jr.
Hey, hey.
Yes, and Pearl, I just want to say that you handled yourself well with Mark from California, and you had an answer for every claim that he made.
And I do want to just expand on one more thing. The reason why Michael learned to hang around children, because they didn't want anything from him. people were always, when they talked to Michael, they came to him, they were always selling something to him, selling an idea, selling a concert, selling something to make money, some business, something, and he just couldn't have just regular friendships. And Michael's been suffering from that really harshly since the days of Thriller, where people would not talk to him like they would their next-door neighbor, he said. And he longed for the people to be genuine with him. He longed for, you know, the mystique of Michael not to interfere with true friendship. And I know a lot of girls just go crazy talking to Michael, and I know that they can't help it, but, you know, he does long for just a genuine, true, real friendship.
Okay, we do have the Peter P. Peter PYT.
Peter Pan PYT.
Peter Pan PYT. How are you, sir? Oh, he's on hold. Okay, let's get him into the conversation.
He's live.
Okay, he's live. You could talk?
Yeah, you could talk.
Are you there, Peter? Let's try this. Peter, are you there?
Hello, mate.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, we don't have Peter. Maybe he'll call back in.
You haven't made it.
No,
hello. I'm
there. He is. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. Now, Pearl, why don't you give him an introduction, because I don't know as much about him as you do.
Well, Peter Pan, a lot of people think that Peter Pan is Michael because he sounds so much like him. Peter Pan PYT has had a presence, or using the name Peter Pan PYT on the internet, for 11 or 12 years. He and I have become wonderful friends since January, when he first called me. And he is just a wealth of Michael Jackson information. He knows everything about Michael. He does magnificent, weird things happen. Mm-hmm.
More than you?
Yeah, more than me. More than me. Certain things that I could not find, he knew. Certain answers I couldn't find, he knew at the tip of his tongue the answers to it. Like, I didn't know the address to, Michael had what was called a hideout, and that was in Westwood, California. And I didn't know the address, and I had looked and looked and looked for the address. And then one day I ran across it, and he said, yeah, that's Michael's address. He sold it sometime in the 90s, and it's true, you know, and plus the Chris Tucker and all that. So hi, Peter.
Hi, Pearl.
I wanted to get into your latest video that you put out last night, I believe, Twit Pick Death Hoax Clues. What's that all about?
Peter, you want to tell about the hot chocolate, or shall I?
Go ahead, Pearl. Go ahead, you Pearly.
Okay, he calls me Pearly because there was a Jackson 5 cartoon that was Pearly, but that's another story. When Peter first contacted me, and I had heard rumors that Peter Pan PYT was Michael for, you know, a few years, and I was always of the mindset, if Michael wants to talk to me, he can find me. I'm not searching out. I'm not looking for any fakes. I'm not chasing down everybody that says that they're Michael Jackson. I'm just not doing it. So when Peter finally contacted me, there were a couple of setups that opened me up to the possibility of even wanting to have conversations with him. He had contacted me via messages on YouTube before that, and I kind of just shunned him off. So this time, I guess you were determined to have a conversation with me, right, Peter, in January?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I contacted you on YouTube, on your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And you never respond back, so.
Right. So to let people know that I'm not chasing after Michael Jackson fakes or the ghost of Michael Jackson. But the way that he came to me, so when we had a conversation, I was amazed by how much he sounded like Michael. So I told him, I said, okay, I know you can't tell me if you're Michael Jackson, so send me some wink, wink, nod, nods that you are. Send me some clues, okay, because if you're supposed to be dead and it's supposed to be this big, gigantic secret, you can't go around telling people I'm really Michael Jackson. You have to deny, 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 right? And so he said, okay, so to speak, and he said he had a brother named Ragu, and I found out that Randy, Michael's brother, Randy, goes by the name of Ragu, which was interesting. And then all of a sudden he had tweeted Chris Tucker, and sometime in January after we talked, and then he had posted a picture of hot chocolate. And then Jermaine had posted a tweet saying there's no such thing as coincidences. And then just a few days after that, they closed down Hollywood Boulevard, which is not any easy feat. And they did the I'll Be There event, which is from Michael's, one of Michael's songs with the Jackson 5, hit songs with the Jackson 5. And Michael's
right.
children, Paris Prince and Blanket, put their handprints and fingerprints in Roman Chinese's cement. And so Chris Tucker gets up, and I'm there. I'm credentialed media. I'm in Hollywood doing my thing. And all of a sudden, Chris Tucker comes up, and he tells a story about spilling hot chocolate at Michael Jackson's house, and Jermaine was a part of the story. So da-da-da-da. So then he had my full undivided attention. And then when I asked him how that happened, what did you say, Peter?
What I said? Well, I couldn't explain it. You know, it's magic.
Well, you know, he sounds like Michael. I'll tell you that. He has the mannerism. You know, and Pearl, I'll let you ask, does he have any of the moves? Does he dance at all? Or is this just strictly just knowledge and stuff like that?
Well, and This Is It, which had a skit in it, the Smooth Criminal skit, in which Gilda, there's a part about a man faking his death, just to let you guys know. But in This Is It, Kenny Ortega does say Michael will reveal himself piece by piece by piece. And the last thing on June 24th, which was the morning of June 25th when Michael left rehearsal, he told Kenny Ortega, the illusion starts tomorrow. Okay, so, and that's under oath, that the illusion starts tomorrow. And the illusion has started tomorrow, which was June 25th. And piece by piece by piece, so I have the voice of Peter and I have the friendship of Peter. And then there's Pablo, Sew for Go from Ashes, which is the visual of Michael, who dances just like Michael, built just like Michael, walks just like Michael, moves exactly like Michael. So are we getting the piece by piece by piece that Michael will reveal himself?
And who's
not
this
in
Bobby?
A sexual way, just
yeah.
that he's alive.
And Bobby Womack, you also bring up in the video?
Yes, Bobby Womack. There's been many, many, many others, but Pablo, Sew for Go from Ashes, Someone in the Dark. And Peter, matter of fact, started telling me about the Someone in the Dark poetry book before I even met Pablo, so I find that. One day Peter just sang a verse of Someone in the Dark, and I didn't know it's from the E.T. soundtrack. And I didn't know, so I guess Peter is the one that kind of introduced me to the whole Pablo scene, even though Pablo's been out since November 2010, reading Michael's poetry, which he's supposed to be a Spanish actor from Madrid, but it's not. But anyway, Pablo, he dances just like Michael. He does everything, you know, exactly like Michael. So we have Peter, the voice, and we have Pablo, the visual.
Now, let me ask you guys both off the top of your head. No one has one favorite song, but which would be the top three songs, at least for you, Pearl?
Ask Peter.
Okay, but let me give you mine first. This is just strictly off the top of my head. I love every song. I don't think there's one song that I don't like. So let me preface this by saying that. Always loved Wannabe Star and Something. It just feels right. It's good. I'm glad they left. They started the documentary with it, and he was great in that performance there. And Wannabe Starting Something, you know, you can go to a game, whether it's basketball, and the coach calls a timeout or intermission or whatever the case, and it could be played for, and it's such a wonderful song. And I thought Akon did a good job of covering it. Of course, it wasn't like the real one, but Wannabe Star Something is absolutely one of my favorite songs from Mike. Then the second one would be Billie Jean. And the third one, strictly off the top of my head, would probably have to be Earth Song.
That's one of my favorites as well. I love Earth Song.
Right. Let's do Peter. Your top three songs off top of your head, and we're going to also say that this is off the top of your head, and every Michael Jackson song is the number one hit, so it's unfair to say, you know, which is your favorite song. So I'll just say the top three songs that you can think of off the top of your head.
the top three songs I can think on top of my head. I would say Stranger in Moscow is one of them. Also, the Invincible album.
What?
I said Stranger in Moscow is one of them. And also from the Invincible album, I would say The Lost Children. It's one of my favorite songs from off the album. And also Rock With You. It's one of my favorites.
Now, you told me Lady of My Life was the favorite last week.
I have so many songs as my favorites. I can't pick just one. I'm sorry.
See? Okay.
It changes. You know, Michael have every songs for every mood.
Mm-hmm.
So your mood changes, so you can pick up different songs that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's my turn now.
It's your turn, Pearlie, and you had a little time to think about this now, so.
Okay, so. Call on Me, which was one of Michael's unreleased songs that came out in during the Thriller album, an unreleased Motown song called Call on Me is one of my favorites. Lady in My Life and PYT. And Rock With You. And I can keep going, but those are my favorites.
Off the top of your head, right? The Call on Me song, is that available on YouTube? Because I never heard of it.
Yes, it's on YouTube. It's called Call on Me. It's the Jackson 5. And Michael was how old when he sang that, Peter?
I don't want to say right now. But wait, I got another song I would like to add to that one.
Okay.
Another song I really love. It's called Find Me a Girl. I just love the rhythm and the horns in this section. It's
yes,
a wonderful
Find Me a Girl
song.
Is beautiful as well. See, I had to change his mood.
Right. My producer says Billie Jean, Beat It, and starting something. Okay, let's get to the Justin Bieber clue that you picked up also in that video. I believe he was doing a Macy's commercial.
Yes, and there was a popularity with the wink, wink, nod, nod, and that's how Peter and I really bonded as friends was through the hot chocolate, the wink, wink, nod, nod connection in the video that I did. And if you want to see it, it's on MichaelJacksonInsider.com, and I proved to you how this happened in sequence, and there's no other way it could be that precise. Well, anyway, Michael always leaves us clues. Always there's a clue for the death hoaxers, always. And this one is a Justin Bieber commercial in Macy's, which was a sponsor for the Bad 25 documentary. And Justin does wink, nod. He has a whole commercial based on wink, nod, smile. And so that is, and it aired right after the segment where they talked about Michael dying, the death segment. And when it aired both on the East Coast and the West Coast at the same time in the same commercial break, right after the death talk, that was for us to know Michael's not really dead. So I just love it, and I just love, you know, I've enjoyed this great adventure immensely.
Okay, you mind if we take another call?
Oh, no, we could take another call. Is Peter gone? Bye, Peter.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're still there. Okay.
Okay, let's go to North Carolina. North Carolina, you're on live with Peter Pan and PYT and Pearl Jr. A comment or question?
Yes, I just have a comment about the favorite songs of the of Michael's. I as well have many, but one of them that, you know, especially tomorrow being the 30th anniversary of Thriller, Human Nature has to be one of my all-time favorites. That song, to me, it's just sung in such a natural, soothing, beautiful voice. It's just one of the most beautiful songs ever sung, and I just love it.
And I have to agree, and I also love the remix that SWV did, Sisters with Voices did, and I also love even Chris Brown did a rendition of it. So, yes, Human Nature, but Michael's, of course, is the best.
Yes. And hi, Peter and Pearl, and I thank you so much for doing this and everything that you've done so far. You're just amazing, and you give us hope. You know, when some of us start feeling losing a little bit of hope, you're always there to, you know, keep us, like, don't give up hope, just keep believing. And we really appreciate having someone such as yourself who has been doing this for so long with us.
thank you so much. And I love Michael's fans. And I know that I try to take care of Michael's fans for him. Because even in This Is It, remember, it said it was for the fans. This great adventure is for Michael's most dedicated fans to pay attention. And it has been a wonderful adventure of highs and lows. And when we get a great clue, doesn't it feel magnificent?
Oh, my God. It is so awesome. I mean, it's just amazing. Every time we get a new clue, it's like, okay, Michael knows that some of us might start, you know, be feeling a little down, and he'll give us something to just pick us right back up again.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And thank you so much for the words of encouragement. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I wanted to ask you your take on Jermaine Jackson, I believe, changing his name.
Yes, to Jackson, S-U-N. Well, I think this is there's multi reasons why he's done that. Michael, there's the big controversy, and Jermaine confirmed in his book that Michael's name is Michael Joe Jackson. We have driver's license, we have death certificate, I mean, we have driver's license, we have passport, we have Michael's old Motown ID, we have so much proof. The FBI confirmed Michael's name was Michael Joe Jackson. In the 2005 trial, if you listen to the verdict, it's Michael Joe Jackson. But in death, his name is Michael Joseph Jackson. And I believe that Michael had a DBA called Michael Joseph Jackson, DBA in California, is doing business as. And I think he utilized both of those names, but his real human being name, legal name, is Michael Joe Jackson. So I think that's one reason Jermaine just wanted to call attention to name changes and how you can use two names and you can have a pseudonym. Jermaine also has a Muslim name. So when I first heard it, I thought he was changing his Muslim name, but no, he didn't. Now, S-U-N is such a subtle change, and it must mean something. Well, there's a lot of things going on with the son. Jermaine says he changed his name, J-A-C-K-S-U-N, because Michael and him loved the son. So Jermaine has admitted it had to do with the son. Michael also, oh, my God, Peter, you told me something, too. Peter told me about a dream that he had, and he told me this months and months and months ago, that he would have a dream that he's always trying to reach the son. You know, and Michael has an odd relationship with the son right now because of his vitiligo. And the vitiligo is true. He didn't bleach his skin. He just had to use creams to even it out, but he has vitiligo. That has been confirmed 100%. But anyway, and then you look at Michael's Immortal Tour, you know, why did they name the Circus de Soleil Tour Immortal? That means not dead. And Soleil in French means sun. Then there was the sun god. You know, there's the origins of Christmas involves a sun god that had died, you know, 3 days before Christmas and was reborn. So that's another thing about the sun. And so we have all these connections and all these clues. So just to kind of cut to the chase, many people believe that the death hoax is over December 21st, 2012. And there's a well-known activist by the name of Dick Gregory who had called me right before Peter called me, as a matter of fact, in January 5th, 2012. And I hadn't talked to Dick Gregory since the 2005 trial. And Dick Gregory is so close with the Jacksons that he stayed at Neverland during the 2005 trial. And we have pictures of film of Dick Gregory going in and out the courtroom with the Jacksons. So he calls me after 5 years in January 5th, 2012, and he says, who is this? And I said, well, my name is Pearl Jr. Well, this is Dick Gregory. Oh, my God, Mr. Gregory, whoa. And he said, oh, I just found your number laying around, and I just decided to tell you that the Mayan calendar ends December 21st this year. Okay, talk to you later. I mean, I had told him that I'm Pearl Jr. I'm a reporter. I was at the 2005 trial, and I also covered the Conrad Murray trial, and I did inform him that he's talking to a reporter, and he gave me that date. And then when I looked up the date, it was the end of the Mayan calendar, and I found another sequence of numbers, which is 11-11-11, and that's what time that the Mayan calendar is supposed to end. And some people think that the end of the Mayan calendar is the end of the world. So that matches with 4 years ago with the Christmas surprise that Michael Jackson faked his death in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Michael Jackson kept wreaths on his Carrollwood home all up until the death announcement. Someone else had to take those wreaths down. And we fans, and I must have been to Carrollwood, I don't know, 10, 20 times, And I always wondered, why is he keeping the wreaths up? So there must be some significance with Christmas and Michael Jackson. So we just have to wait till December 21st, 2012, and find out what happens that day.
Absolutely. Pearl, I want to thank you a million for joining us on Series 3. There's just so much more.
There's way more.
yes. This thing, you haven't even scratched the surface. But I will call you after the show to book the next one.
Sure.
Yes, and Peter, thanks for joining us. I think this is probably one of the best shows out of the
series. It's an honor.
Yes.
What'd you say, Peter?
It's an honor.
Right, and Peter, do you want to give away your Twitter so people can follow you?
You can follow me at Mr. Smelly Jelly.
Okay, and Pearl?
And Smelly Jelly was what Quincy Jones called Michael Jackson.
Right. I'm at King Jordan Radio, and Pearl, you're at?
I'm at Pearl JR, at Pearl JR, at P-E-A-R-L-J-R on Twitter.
Okay. So one last time to get the your hands on that video for Christmas.
Alive Is Michael Jackson Really Dead is available on Netflix, or you can order the DVD, which has bonus footage, so you get extra stuff on Amazon. And then Michael Jackson, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, I recommend it highly to Mr. Mark that had called so he can learn the facts of what happened in the case.
Yeah,
and that's
Mark,
available.
You know,
and that's available on Amazon.com. And if you can't remember all that, just go to my website, which is MichaelJacksonInsider.com, and you will find information on everything that I talked about on that website or in the videos or in the books that I wrote.
Pearl, thanks a million for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And I will call you a little bit after, and we will schedule something and check Pearl's Twitter and Facebook and myself, and we will post it as soon as we have a date that's good for both of us.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you. Bye, Peter.
Bye, Pearl.
Okay, we thank Pearl for joining us, and we thank all the listeners. Of course, Monday we're going to have Billy Caputo, former WWE referee, and Thursday we're going to have Charles Linden. Yes, who is an expert on panic attacks, anxiety disorders, and whatnot. If you want to hear the replay, go find the link, and you will be able to do that. I'll be posting it on Facebook. Well, actually, go to King Jordan Radio, press the like button there, or find me on Twitter at King Jordan Radio, and you can find out all the information there. Once again, I want to thank Pearl for joining us, and we just had a great week with two lawyers from CNN and Pearl Jr. Everybody have a great weekend. Thanks a lot.